Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
There's no reason to touch
it. And inform you in the afternoon.
I think your cheeks are a little loose.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Rozier dribbles through his legs, draws two men. Got to be an open man somewhere. Al Horford looking for him. It's Hayward in the left corner. Three, bounces in. Of course it does. 24 threes for the Celtics tonight.
This isn't my grandma's game she used to watch.
24 for 50. 109-99. Celtics by 10. 5:08 to go.
All right, hour three, Chris Gasper of the Globe joins us this hour on Agenda Free Friday. Agenda Free Friday is brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges, they don't. PlanetFitness.com. Chris's stint is brought to you by Mass General Hospital. We opened up the show, and we'll revisit it right now on the Celtics on that nice win last night over the Bucks. Both, it's really two-pronged about how the Celtics are looking and how they looked last night, and the nature of the NBA and the direction of the NBA. The Celtics last night set a franchise record in the third quarter for three-pointers and are one off the NBA record by the time the game is over. And I'm here to tell you that record is not going to stand for long because these teams are chucking at record rate and it's not going in the other direction. So where do you want to start with that, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I just think I look at this game and it confirms a theory that Murray knows I've espoused on both the Sports Hub Celtics show and on Gasper and Murray. And that's about what the starting lineup is. And you take Jaylen Brown out, and Gordon Hayward had a very strong game. And I can't think of a game this year where Hayward and Brown have both had it going in the same game. And so when you look at it, I know Jimmy mentioned this in the email chain, completely agree. I just think at some point in the year, maybe that starting five will work. But right now it's not. And I think last night was proof of that. And so someone has to go to the bench. It should be Hayward, but it won't for ego and you know, financial reasons. It will probably be Jaylen Brown. But I think they got to tweak that starting five.
Why should
there's
be
a
Hayward?
Lot more offensive efficiency. Well, because he's a better ball handler, and I think he'd help that second unit more. Right. And Rozier could play off the ball. I think it would be better for that unit, but that's not what's going to happen. But I think the starting five, you look at it, you know, the Newport five, as I know our friend Chris Forsberg calls it, I think at some point in the year it will click, but right now it's not. And somebody has to go to the bench. And I think last night was proof of that because they were much better and more efficient offensively when you pulled one of those guys out and put somebody in, Semi Ojeleye, where you literally just said, hey, just stand in the corner and shoot this open three if you have a chance. That's it. Otherwise, get out of the way.
So less mouths to feed.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a problem from an efficiency standpoint.
How do you feel Jaylen Brown will handle that?
You know, I don't think he'll be thrilled about it, but somebody has to do it. And I also think that to this point in the year, he's been sort of up and down. I think he's the guy who suffered the most with sort of the entire collection of talent they have and trying to figure out where everybody fits and where everybody's going to get their points. So maybe the second unit would be better for him because there's more shots. You know, it's not so much about who starts the game, right? It's about who finishes the game. And so they can figure it out. But I just think when you look at it, I could be wrong. If someone remind me if there's one, but I can't think of a game this year where Jaylen Brown and Hayward both had it going from an efficiency standpoint in the same game.
In the long run, I think he's the odd guy out. I mean, they're going to have to make a trade at some point, right? You know, and maybe they'll have another pick to deal. Although, as Murray pointed out this morning, Sacramento's 6-3 right now.
That's not going to last.
So I don't think so either. But, you know, so you should get a high pick and Jaylen Brown to move for something.
So let's just hit on this for 1 second. Again, yeah. You've got one big chip left, and that's the Sacramento lottery pick.
Well, don't sleep on the Memphis pick, too.
Isn't it protected?
It is. It's top 8 protected this year, top 6 next year, and then unprotected in 2021.
Okay,
but let's see where it falls.
Let's see if the earth doesn't blow up before 2021. You're going to have to do on your own time.
Okay.
And if
that's what you said before the, you know, Jason Tatum pick hit, but go ahead.
Well, and if it's, no, that was this year.
No, but I'm saying 3 years before, like, I don't want to talk about this pick.
No, no, it's true. It's true. It has to be a little bit more immediate for me.
Yeah, I know.
No, but the Sacramento pick had a chance to be 2 or 3.
Yeah.
We were worried about Sacramento being 1, that they sucked so much that they were actually 1.
And you wouldn't get it.
Because it's top 1 protected. Yeah. So we were worried about that. Yeah. Now, who's this kid? Is it Fox?
De'Aaron
Fox had a triple-double last night.
So yeah.
against the tankerific Hawks, though.
But they've had road wins against the Thunder, who I know stink. But still,
slow start.
For them,
not
that's for the Sacramento Kings, it's
you're not buying
win.
On the
not
Kings?
Not buying it. Let me see what they do. I think they're at Milwaukee and Toronto in back-to-back games in their next two games.
Yeah, their schedule's going to toughen up.
Get back to me after that. One of their wins is against the Wizards, who are off to a terrible start. Brooks is going to get fired. And they've also beaten slow-starting teams like Oklahoma City has started really... Like, do you guys really think Oklahoma City's not going to be in the playoffs? You know, I mean, I think there are some teams in the West that have started slowly, and I know Sacramento is starting quickly. I don't believe it. I don't buy in. I don't think it's going to last. I don't think they're going to be as bad as we thought, but they're not going to be this good.
Yeah, so that's really what it is. Yeah. I mean, over the 82 games, like, I think most people, myself included, expect this team to be garbage, and, you know, this is going to be a real asset here. A 6-3 start, 5-game winning streak, like, they're not going to completely suck this year.
But you got to look at the rest of the West, though, because the West is still really tough. So right now, slow-starting teams are OKC, Houston. I don't know how people feel differently about the Lakers, but they still have LeBron. You think if they're not in the playoffs, they're going to be right at the top. So when you start doing the math of the West, something has to give. Like Sacramento will go, you know, and water finds its level,
but it turns
and the Kings
out
will too.
But if they're the 10th pick, that's a diminished asset.
Yeah,
you thought
sure.
it might be 2 or 3.
Correct.
Sure. Okay, so that aside, how about the direction of the league and the way the Celtics and everyone else are playing now with all those threes?
Well, so taking the threes out of it, and I'll get to that in a second. I mean, scoring's way up. It's as high as it's been since the 70-71 season. So if you lived through, and I know all you guys, you know, did as well, through the Pat Riley era when he ruined basketball, single-handedly ruined the sport.
He did.
In the early to mid-90s, you know, basically with bully ball, you know, Anthony Mason and those guys. I'll take this over that any day of the week.
I'll take this over the Jordan
style. You know, at least there's a lot of ball movement. That being said, I think, you know, there's too many threes. And I feel like it's one of those things, it's like football too, right? Situational awareness. Like, you mentioned this possession I was listening on the ride in where the Celtics got the offensive rebound twice and there were two quick jacked up threes. The one by Gordon Hayward made me want to pull my hair out. You know, if you're going to shoot all those threes, that's fine. But at some point in the game, you have to realize, you know, time and score, right? Time and score. It's more important to possess the ball, take that time off the clock, than jack up the three blindly. And so I think that's sort of the problem. And I think if you look at the Celtics in Houston last year, conference finals, game 7.
Good one.
The math is what the math is. You shoot 40% from three, it's 50% from two. But I'll tell you what, you think the Celtics or the Rockets wouldn't have taken a few more made twos in their game sevens
Good
last
one.
Year versus jacking up a million threes? And those two teams literally shot themselves out of those games.
Chris, it almost hurt the Celtics last night. I mean, and look, you know, you're talking about a playoff game, which is obviously more important. But I thought they were 15. They let Milwaukee in the game because they kept hucking up threes. They went 4-for-13 in the fourth quarter. Like when the game was on the line, the percentage went down. Right, I don't think that's unusual.
But it is the math. I think it comes from the nerds.
It is the math, yeah.
It's max optimization. I mean, just think of this. You know, and any other era, on any other planet, the Bucks, they made as many field goals as the Celtics on the night, 41 each. They outscored the Celtics in the paint 62-22. They outscored them by 40 freaking points in the paint, and they got to the line 30 times to the Celtics 13. I mean,
should have been a blowout.
It's a blowout for the team that's, you know, talk about what's efficient is getting those points in the paint and getting the line, and they lose by four. Why lose by four? Because the Celtics chucked a million threes and shot 43% from the three. You shoot 43% from the three-point line and take over 50, you're going to win.
Yeah, I mean, they made 24 threes, the Celtics did, and
Bucks
the Bucks only made nine. So, I mean, that's – and also Mike Budenholzer's defensive system is one where he still is sort of –
Well, he did not defend the line, though.
No, he doesn't. He's the anti-Brad. Brad's defensive system is defend the line. Budenholzer's system is sort of old school, and they're trying to prevent you from getting in the paint and getting layups and all that stuff. And so that's why the Celtics, I think that in part is why the Celtics shot so many threes, because they knew that was sort of the liability in the Bucks defense. They were going to get open looks, and they got a lot of them, and they made them. But that style of basketball, it can come and go quickly. And we all know it's a copycat league. You know, it works for Golden State because they have two of the greatest shooters of all time, right? Three, really.
Three.
If you want to throw Durant in
Three.
There, too, right? So it works for them. A team like Houston, it works for them over the long haul of the season, but then they get in a series against Golden State, the team that has better pure shooters than they do. And, you know, obviously Chris Paul got injured, and that affected it, too. But you can shoot yourself into games and shoot yourself out of games just playing that way if you don't have the pure shooters to do it.
See, I think Golden State shows discretion, though. Like, I was rattling off that list to you earlier that 21 teams in the league take over 33s a game now. Golden State's in the middle of the pack.
Yeah.
They're 14th. They're, like, right in the middle of the league. So they recognize now their guys are all, as you said, snipers, all three of them.
Yeah.
Those guys are ridiculous.
Yep.
But beyond that, they recognize when there are points to go, times in the game to go for two.
Okay, Chris, give me your lead thought on Brady Rodgers, Packers, Patriots.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because obviously the matchup of the quarterbacks, but I think it's a measuring stick game, you know, for both of these teams. I think for the Patriots, defensively, defending Rodgers, is there any more of a 180 than going from Derek Anderson to Aaron Rodgers? right? So anything you put on film last week against Buffalo, does any of that translate against Aaron Rodgers?
No, zero.
I want to see that. I want to see where this defense is at, because I keep pounding the table and saying I believe this defense will be better than last year's defense, but we're now halfway through the year, and I can't say that that's the case. And so I want to see what they do, if they can make some headway against Aaron Rodgers. And I think the other side of it, you know, for the Packers, they're coming off a game against the Rams where they played pretty well. They held that offense under 30 points. And does any of that sort of translate to playing the Patriots? Because the Packers' big thing has been, we pressure the quarterback, we pressure the quarterback, we pressure the quarterback. Brady normally destroys that. And so do they come up with something else? Is there some other way here? So I think this is a big game for both of these teams to find out really who they are and who they're going to be this season.
Who's the second best quarterback of this century?
Of this century?
Who's the second best quarterback of this century?
Joe Montana.
No, he was
since 2000.
This century. Okay, I thought you meant like the last 100 years.
Since 2000.
Okay, second best quarterback since 2000.
This millennium.
I say Aaron Rodgers.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Ahead of Peyton Manning?
Yes.
Yeah. Get him, Chris.
Definitely ahead of Peyton Manning. Because Rodgers, from a talent standpoint, can do things that Peyton Manning could not do, which is extend plays and make throws on the run outside the pocket. As you know, just pure talent, the ability to do some of the other things. And when it comes to sort of the winning, I don't think Aaron Rodgers has had some of the gag jobs that Peyton Manning had in the Super Bowls. I know it's two for Manning and one for Rodgers, but in my world, it's really 1-1.
Because the second one, he was just handing the ball off.
Yeah, I mean, second, we lost the job to Osweiler. I mean, Osweiler could have won that Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, that's right? Fair.
I mean, he totally could have won that Super Bowl.
No. Mm-hmm. I don't know about that.
Yep.
I don't know about that. But if you want to say that that wasn't a...
He was a sidecar.
Yeah, he was a sidecar,
yes,
for sure.
Exactly.
Yes, he was a sidecar.
Although he did play well against the Patriots in the championship game.
He had a couple touchdown passes against you.
So do you put Russell Wilson ahead of Manning?
No. I wouldn't do that.
So Brady Rodgers Manning. You want to put someone else ahead of Manning. Who else do you want to put ahead of Manning?
I mean, you know, Breeze has some pretty good numbers.
So you're down on Manning in terms of this all-time thing?
A little bit. I mean, I just think he was a great regular season quarterback. And a lot of times, I remember one time being with you. It was actually the Super Bowl Breeze beat Manning. We were at NBC Sports Boston, and it was before that drive. And I said to you, I said, Manning's going to throw a pick. And he did. And to me, that just defines the fact that I would say that guy's going to throw a pick here, and he did in the Super Bowl, and that sealed the game. To me, that just kind of defines how you feel. And that's not statistics. It's just when Brady has the ball late in the game, like against the Eagles, you thought, oh, he's going to win. You're not thinking he's going to get strip sack fumbled, which he did, which is on him. But when Manning has it in that situation, what do you think is going to happen?
No question. Here comes a bacon strip.
And so that's the difference. And that to me is, again, you can't quantify that. You can't define that. That's why I drop him down a little bit, because I can't think of any other great quarterback that's your first reaction is he's going to screw this up.
Okay, all those thoughts are on the table. What are you smirking at, Maz?
Because Drew Brees is a total indoor phony. 1-5 in the postseason in his career on the road.
All right.
1-5.
Let's pick this all up on the other side.
Felger and Maz. The Sports Hub. Felger and Maz.
Wow.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
He's just, you know, he's a great player. And I think he's, you know, he's going to play his best. He always does. I mean, he plays pretty great every week. We face other great quarterbacks this year. Our defense sets some pretty tough challenges. You know, I have my own going against that defense. Really well coached. They got a lot of scheme. They got a lot of talented players, very versatile players on defense. So that's where my attention's focused. And I'll let, you know, our defense really focus on how to stop their offense.
That's Brady today on Rodgers Brady. To your phones, as promised, with Chris Gasper in studio. Jay on the Cape here on the Patriots. What do you got, Jay?
Yes, on Gronk. I think that press conference non-answer that you guys have pointed out says the whole thing. I think Brady's moved on without him, and I wonder if you guys think that maybe Brady actually supporting Belichick to phase the guy out.
Oh, God, no. I don't think that.
Definitely not. I think he just didn't want to. I was down there today, and I was in that press conference. He just didn't want to be part of that. He didn't want to wade into the... I don't want to say controversy. He didn't want to wade into the storyline. Mike Giardi asked that question. It was a very good question. And
he was
in the process of asking a follow-up.
Why don't we do this? Go ahead.
What is your view of the inability to connect consistently with Rob over the last 5 or 6 weeks? I mean, his numbers are down. It's a little different for us to watch because you guys have had such a great connection over the years.
I don't know. I don't think we played our best offensively over the last, you know, 8 games. So I'd say we got to all figure out whether it's me and Rob or me and Josh or me and Jules or everyone. I think we're just trying to work at it every week. But We're 6-2. I think we realize our best football is ahead of us. We work hard at it, and that's what our goal is.
Okay, so you said someone tried to follow up, and he shot it down?
No, Mike tried to follow. He didn't shoot it down. Another person sort of went in with a question, but you know how it is when you're at the podium. You can kind of choose. You know, it's like you hear two things at the same time.
Yeah.
So the other question was not a...
What's your favorite cupcake?
No, the other question was about the Packers and what he'd seen on film. And the follow-up from Mike was sort of a... I can't remember the exact phrasing, but it was sort of trying to follow up on that line of questioning. And it was a very artfully asked question. And it just didn't seem like, you know, Tom wanted to really wade into that one. And I don't blame the Patriots because, like, that's, you know, this Gronk thing, like, this is real. Like, we're halfway through the year and this guy's not going to get his money. And I think that's a story. You know, for a guy who year after year is in a situation where he's trying to renegotiate the contract, in a situation where he's trying to get more money added to the contract. So now he got these incentives, and it's not looking good for him getting these incentives, for him getting the money. I mean, right now he is at the 80, he's at 80.25% of the snaps. So we'd get the $1.1 million for that. But the other stuff, he's not on track to get that money for catches, for yards, for touchdowns.
You think that's affecting him?
I think he's a human being. And as much as these guys talk about winning and all this, if that's in your contract, like you guys have incentives in your contracts, right? For ratings.
Yep.
So I'm sure you check the ratings. I'm sure you know if you're on track to get it or not.
Every once in a while I check them.
Yeah, not me. No,
Okay, Mass.
I'm joking.
I mean, he's human. No, I know. I'm just teasing you. But I mean, the guy's human. And as much as these guys get programmed down there that you should just be happy with 6-2 and happy with 6-2, when you haven't caught a touchdown since week one and you know you need 9 touchdowns to get $1.1 million and you're halfway through the season, aren't you going to kind of look at, aren't you going to be a little sad?
Okay.
I think this is why we got sad Gronk.
Do you think he's getting open?
Not the way he did before, no. And I have to give Lombardi credit for that because in the beginning I thought it was propaganda, but it's legit.
He's not getting open.
Because because I think he's hurt.
Okay, how about sad Gronk? Do you have the Kern cut for me, Jimmy? I'm sorry. We'll run it here since we're talking about it. This is Kern on his press conference the other day and sort of, you know, sad Gronk.
It's been going on all season, really. You know, he has had a very small role in the offense for a variety of reasons. Early on, it was because he was the only target. Then I think his body started to bother him a little bit. I don't think it's extreme, but I think he feels vulnerable right now. I mean, after the Kansas City game, when you saw Brady take his face in his hands and say, "Forever, bro." Well, Phil later asked Gronk what that was all about, and Gronk confirmed that was because I thanked him for going to me down the stretch. Why does Rob Gronkowski have to thank Tom Brady? Because he feels vulnerable. He feels marginalized. And it's a very interesting thing, and I think part of that goes back to April when the Patriots threatened to trade him and had him on the block. And it's just, I don't think it has anything to do with money. I think it has to do with how he feels about his position here.
Vulnerable and marginalized.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, the one thing I disagree with there with Tom, and certainly he's plugged in more than I am, but, if, you know, again, of course it has to do with money. The guy's a human being. If it didn't have to do with money, then why are the incentives in the contract? He would have just played for what he had, you know? And he knows. I mean, yeah, you're upset because you feel like they're not counting on you as much or whatever the deal is, but you also know in the back of your head that them not counting on you, them not going to you as much, that's costing you money. That's costing you money. Okay. And when has Gronk or his representation, Drew Rosenhaus, not cared about money vis-a-vis Gronk?
Never. Never.
Never.
Never not cared. Let's see this week. The Packers are just the get-right opponent, a team that really isn't that good at the game planning thing. So I wouldn't be surprised one bit if Green Bay just plays him straight up. That's what they do. John in Vermont has a Red Sox thought for us here on an Agenda-Free Friday. Go ahead, John.
Yes, one play that I thought was pivotal in the World Series was in Game 4 when Kimball came on and started another meltdown. Devers made an outstanding play. There was already a guy at second. There was already a two-run homer in that inning. He got the second out, I believe, on that great play down the line. That would have been another double.
Right, John.
Would have brought the tying run to the plate.
Do you have a bigger point on that?
Well, just that really changed Game 4.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. I'm sorry. Thank you for the call.
Boy, the reliving of the World Series is tough, I have to say. And I'm saying that as a listener. I listen to you guys all the time, even when I'm not on. You know, everybody's sort of reliving their moment, their thing that stood out to them. It's been tough.
Yeah, no, well, I mean...
Devers is a key guy, though.
Okay,
that's his point. Yeah, if that's his point, I would say even, you know, we focus on the offense with Devers, but the fact is that he played a pretty good third base, too. So, the overall, look, the guy's 21. If we're going to use the same critique or standard that we use for Mookie Betts. 311 career average in the playoffs with an OPS of almost 900.
He's actually a huge guy. He's someone you can't trade because you've got all the service time left with him.
He's, correct. He's low money and he's productive.
Is he and Benintendi in the same year?
Pretty much.
So, like, those are the guys you have to keep. Those are the guys that have to produce because you need that for balancing your payroll. If you're going to pay Price $30 million, and who knows if they're going to pay Sale $30 million and Betts, and, like, you've got to have those guys. So they better be good.
Yeah, and it feels to me, look, and they're both left-handed too, right? You're still going to see 70% right-handed pitching. And on top of it, you know, to me, it feels like Devers hits good pitching and in big spots.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you can go back to that Chapman home run last year. I mean, he sort of announced himself as somebody who can hit good pitching.
I mean, you know, they again, pinch hit RBI that opened up or gave him the lead, rather, in game four, that was, right? Like, they'll run together after. But Devers was huge for them in October.
All right, we got Gasper in here. He covered the World Series. We'll get to more baseball thoughts and where do the Red Sox go from here. We've got that on the table. We got Brady Rogers on the table, of course, the Celtics game last night. A lot of interesting angles with that. A little Bruins goaltender situation as well. Back to you right after Murray's update here on the very latest on Rob Gronkowski. Don't go anywhere.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub.
I think efforts will be made to keep as many players together as we can, ideally. But I also know baseball rules, finances make it difficult because sometimes when guys become free agents, they receive offers they can't refuse. But if you told me today we could bring the same club back together totally and it'd fit into everything, we'd be thrilled with that.
Okay, that's Dave Dombrowski saying if they could bring everyone back, they'd be thrilled with the exact same team next year. But that free agents often get offers they can't refuse. So he knows he's losing guys. Chris Gasper, I'll start with you. Who do they have to keep of their free agents? Kimbrel, Kelly, Eovaldi, Pierce.
Is there Pomerantz?
Pomerantz, fine. Adam.
None of them. There's none of them that they have to keep.
Really?
In my opinion. You have to?
Okay.
No.
Well, prioritize.
No. I mean, for me, and I know, you know, I got jumped on the other night on NBC Sports Boston for this. I still say Kimbrel. I know he wasn't good in the playoffs. I get it. But if you build a team, I've always said this, right? You need two teams. You need the team over 162 that gets you to the playoffs, and then the team within that team that wins in the playoffs, right? And to me, Kimbrel's a big part of the 162 getting there. And if you have a team that's built to win now, which they still are, the one thing you cannot have is uncertainty or a question mark at the closer position in the regular season. So if you think you're just going to go out there and, like, find some guy to close in the American League East, it might be a little more difficult than you think.
How do you feel if it's Joe Kelly or Ryan Brazier or Matt Barnes?
No.
No.
Definitely not.
Did you watch Joe Kelly in the World Series?
But see, this is what I'm saying. Like, the recency bias.
Recency bias.
This drives me insane. Like, even Alex Cora said... Cora said during the World Series, he was asked about Kelly. He's like, we got the guy back we had in April and May. Well, what about June, July, August, September? Those months counted. Somebody had to pitch out of the bullpen when he was pitching in the fifth or sixth inning and help them get to the playoffs, right? So, yeah, he was awesome in the postseason. I give it to him. I do. He was great. And the guy is incredibly naturally talented. But to sort of base it on that and say, like, he's going to be your closer over the 162 for a playoff team, for a championship team, that sounds risky to me.
Okay, so you say you need a closer, a bona fide closer. Fair enough. Do you trust Kimbrel?
In the regular season, absolutely. And if David Price can turn it around in the playoffs and Joe Kelly can turn around in the playoffs, why can't Kimbrel next
postseason? Well, he was yanking in the regular season too, you know. He lost his control this year.
Towards the end of the year, there's no question about it. But again, if we're talking about these other guys who suddenly, you know, found themselves in the postseason, then why would Kimbrel not be able to do it? My only thing on Kimbrel is, again, you asked me who's the one guy. Yeah. He would be the guy. The problem is it's going to be a lot of money, and it's going to be more money than he's really worth. So I think Dombrowski was laying the groundwork there to let you know that they're not bringing him back.
How about those other guys?
I mean, to me, it's Eovaldi. Because I go just based on versatility. You could use a right-handed starter. You're left-handed heavy in the rotation anyway. He's a power arm. Worst case scenario, you stick him in the bullpen and he's a weapon there. And you know what? Give him starter money. Don't cheap out. You're the Red Sox. If he wants to be a starter, tell him yes. Give him whatever you got to give him to sign him. And when I say whatever, I don't think it's going to be $20 million. He made two this past year. He's got a history of injury. But I think he might be looking at 3 years, 35. I don't know, something like that for him as a guess for me, and I'm just throwing that out there. I have no idea. I would give him that, stick him in the rotation, see how it goes, and then late in the year, if you need him to move over, you move him over. But the rest of them, bye-bye.
I think
see you later.
I think if you re-sign Eovaldi, then I think you could make a decision. You don't have to, but if you want to save some money, try and look long term here, I think you could deal Porcello, who has a year left on the deal.
So that's, you know, I don't know if we've discussed this, but
so there's a long term play there too. It's a good point.
Who'd you rather have over the next 5 years, Evaldi or Porcello?
Porcello.
Next 5 years?
Yeah, because I think he's more durable.
I mean, it depends on the money too.
But
right?
But again, I think you could give Evaldi a 3 year deal and get away with it, and it won't be what you're paying Porcello. So I think Porcello's a better pitcher just because of the durability. He makes 30 starts every year. That guy's automatic. Like, you know, and again, he's not a power arm per se, so I don't think you're getting quite the wear and tear that you get with other guys. So, you know, to me, but listen, do I think they're going to keep Porcello? No, I don't. I think that Porcello's probably gone after next year,
all right.
if not sooner.
There's some Red Sox thoughts for you. Add them to the list. Rob in the recliner has something for us. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Gasper, I love you, but please never refer to the Celtics as the Newport Five ever again.
Oh, it's a Chris Forsberg thing. Yeah, that's my boy.
Yeah. Oh. And Felger, I'm citing you for take theft.
Okay.
You for adopting verbatim my solution to the cross-conference scheduling I've given you over the past couple of seasons.
Oh, well, thank you
I'm
for
glad
that.
You did.
Thank you.
I'm glad you did. I want to get that going, right? Like, seriously, that should be done. And, both I love both Cora and Cassidy. Sorry to switch subjects like that, but neither of them give me that whole BS or treat me like I'm dumb. Like, it's such a departure from both of their predecessors. It's so refreshing.
It's true. It's true. There's a line there. You can't rip your players and alienate them, but can you, when it calls for it, just call it like it is? And Cassidy on Rask, I think, has been great. The cross-conference thing that he's talking about is, it's really not right that this is the only time Aaron Rodgers is ever going to play in New England. I mean, you know, unless I don't know if Rodgers is going to make another 8 years. Probably not. He's 34 going on 35. So maybe, but for all intents and purposes, this is the only time he'll ever play in New England. There's been only two real matchups between Brady and Rod. You know, that ain't right. They've got.
Well, Aaron was hurt for one of them.
Of course. You know. But, you know, still, be that as it may, you've played Seattle twice during
this
run.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. I mean,
that's
yeah,
wrong.
That was the one when that could have been such a great rivalry.
Right. I mean, those were great games. They've all been great games. So, you know, we said instead of playing one conference in the NFC every year, you balance it out where you play four divisions, the team that finishes where you finished. So if you're a first-place team, you play the four first-place NFC teams from last year. If you're in second, third, fourth, and da-da-da. So obviously the last-place teams are going to get more sucky matchups, but maybe that'll help them get better, help parity. And if you don't want sucky matchups, don't suck. Start winning.
Is that a Felker and Mass
yes.
tenet? If you don't
you
want
go.
Sucky matchups, don't
yeah.
suck.
Yeah,
I feel like you guys
are going
to add that to the list.
Yeah,
if you don't want sucky matchups, don't suck.
Aaron in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Aaron. Oh, I'm sorry, Eric. Eric in New Hampshire. Hi.
Hey, how's it going? First-time caller. My question was for the guy that called in about the Brady hater, came up with the stats on the backup quarterbacks when Brady and Rodgers were out.
Yes.
Doesn't that just show the testament to Brady off the field with his coaching ability
no.
for his backup quarterback?
No. Look, I mean, Brady's better than Rodgers. Don't misconstrue this. But, you know, part of it has been coaching. I mean, Brady has had the pairing with the greatest coach of all time, arguably, and Rodgers has been handed something far less and something that exemplifies that the caller brought up. Without Tom Brady, Bill Belichick with the Patriots, starting in 2000, so excluding 99, right? Excluding the Bledsoe stuff.
Excluding 2000.
Starting right. 2001.
Right, exactly.
Starting really 2000. Basically starting when Brady started, right?
Right.
Because you're not counting the losses.
Then. Right. So this is what the caller did. He said they're 14-6 with Castle,
sure.
Garoppolo, and Brissett. They're 14-6. They're a playoff team. The Packers, when Rodgers have been out, oh my God, look out. A train wreck. So I think that speaks to the coaching that Brady's gotten and the program that Brady's with. It's taking nothing away from him.
Yeah, I mean, 11 of those wins were in one season with a team that had gone undefeated with Brady the year before and was five games worse without him.
So?
No, I'm just saying. I mean, if you start at 16-0, it's like, let's say the team had been, you know, 10-6, right? And they were five games worse.
You think they were going to be 16-0 with Brady the next year?
Well, that team was loaded. I mean, 16-0.
You think they were going to go 32-0, Chris?
No. But I'm saying, like, that was a 15-1, 14-2
team. Okay, so right, 14-2. So it was four losses less. When Rodgers is out, it's forget about it. They're not even. They're barely in the league. They'd be relegated if this were soccer. Like, so I mean, it's just a fair point.
I think it's a fair point, but I think it's a little bit of an oversimplification. Like, you can have great coaching, obviously. Like, I think the difference with Rodgers, like the difference there is. Belichick is a guy who can affect every side of the ball, offense, defense, special teams, right? Mike McCarthy is an offensive coach. The Packers haven't been able to figure out their defense. And so the issue is there when you take Rodgers away, like, okay, like what effect is McCarthy going to have at that point? Whereas Belichick, I think, can be in a position to compensate for Brady. Compensating for Brady being out, to me, is different from being in a position of enhancing him all the time and saying, well, here's your argument. You know, this guy's definitely enhancing this guy to a point, you know, that's different. Whereas with Rodgers, that's not quite the same thing. His coach isn't enhancing him in the same manner.
However you parse it, you just can't argue with that Brady landed in a better place
question.
With a better coach
did.
And a better
yeah,
program.
Absolutely. I mean,
just
absolutely.
What it is. Long commercial-free segment is next.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I've never played against Tom Brady. I'm glad he's our quarterback. He's a great quarterback. And he's, you know, he's won a lot of games for us. And hopefully he'll win a lot more. And we've won a lot of games because of him. But I've never played against Tom Brady. It's a different context. I'd say playing against Aaron Rodgers is very, very difficult. He's as good as anybody that I've faced. We faced a lot of good ones through the years, and that's not to take anything away from anybody else. I'm just saying the guy's a great player. He can do everything that a quarterback needs to do. I mean, once again, he leads the league in touchdowns and interceptions. He leads the league in big plays. He's thrown, I don't know, however many long passes to however many different receivers. It's not all one guy, so he's a great player.
Belichick this week on Aaron Rodgers. What was your thought as you heard that mess?
So he says he's as good as anyone I've ever faced. Is he talking about just with the Patriots? Because Belichick faced Montana when he was with the Giants. Like, I hear that one and go, I hope he's talking about just the Patriots. Because, you know, to me, Montana's the closest to Brady you'll ever find. Montana's the guy. And again, I know I'm biased on this particular topic, but I think most people would agree with that. Like, so I hope he's just talking about during his Patriots career.
That would have been a great question. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's great. I would still put Montana ahead of Rodgers.
Yes, of course.
I would.
Please.
I still would. But if you're talking about pure talent, which might have been sort of what Bill was alluding to there in terms of a quarterback who's hard to defend because he can do it all, you know, taking sort of the intangibles out of it. And obviously the intangibles are huge, particularly with Brady and Montana. I wonder if that's what he was getting at, because Rodgers is the guy that can do it all. You know, he's as accurate as anybody who's ever played the game, but he can make those plays on the run, and he doesn't turn the football over, and he can make throws like Manning could make or like Marino could make. He really can do a little bit of everything, and I think maybe that's where he was going.
And his intangibles are decent. It's not like he's some clown. It's just when you compare his intangibles to Brady's, anyone's intangibles to Brady's, That's where I think Brady separates. As we're listening to that cut, we also have up on the monitor here on the NFL Network the 2014 game in Green Bay that the Patriots lost 21-16. As you're watching this, what's your thought there, Chris?
Yeah, I just remember being at that game, and I even though the Patriots lost that game and it snapped their winning streak, I remember coming out of that game feeling like this team's really, really good, the Patriots. And they're a championship caliber team. Like, I had more confidence in the Patriots after that game than I did before. And I think it was because they got down 13-0. They're on the road. Things could have turned. They could have gotten blown out. And as well as Rodgers played, and he was great in that game, no question about it, but they held them under 30 points. They made a game out of it. And I thought, okay, you know, this defense is legit. This team is legit. And, you know, they went on, obviously, to win the Super Bowl.
There's no question about it. It's like we get into this thing with fans all the time, like the 42-17 over the Bills.
Does worthless.
Freaking
yeah, it doesn't tell you
nothing.
Anything.
It does nothing.
It's worthless.
As a fan, it's like, you enjoy it. I get it. But you learn so much more about your team, even in defeat. That was a really good ball game.
It was a great game.
In Green Bay, it was clean. I don't think there was a turnover on either side. It was just two good teams playing a good game. And so you came out on the wrong side of it, but it showed you what you were capable of. And same with Green Bay, frankly. That should have been the rematch for the Super Bowl, but that was the year Green Bay puked all over themselves in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, who was that guy on the onside kick?
Bostic, John Bostic.
Okay.
I don't remember the good guys. I remember that. John
Bostic.
You
remember that guy?
John Bostic. But there was a cavalcade of nonsense in those last 5 minutes that I could give you that I won't bore you with. But that should have been the Super Bowl. But either way, you know, you can learn something about yourself. Even in defeat, it's okay.
No. In fact, oftentimes you learn more in defeat. I mean, you know, as long as you're not getting beaten 50-0, like in that case, you don't have enough talent. But the 40-7 games, oh, God, you can shove those. Please, they're completely, utterly worthless. Worthless. They teach you nothing.
Okay, Chris, final thoughts on this game on Sunday night. What do you think it comes down to?
That's a great question. I mean, I think it really comes down to sort of, you know, how good is this Patriots defense? You know, are they able to? Green Bay's coming in hot, you know, offensively. Like, Devontae Adams has over 130 yards receiving in his last three games. And we know what Aaron Rodgers can do. And so, as I said when I opened this hour with you guys, I can't think of any more drastic turnaround in the NFL than going from Derek Anderson to Aaron Rodgers. I think the defense gained some confidence. They played well on Monday night, but how much of that translates over? And I think on the flip side of it, it's what's Green Bay's game plan? You know, does Mike Pettine just say, we're going to do what we do and blitz? Or does he sort of tap into the old Rex Ryan thing and say, you know, okay, we know that you think we're going to blitz and we're going to do that for a half, but then in the second half, I get an entirely different game plan and we're dropping into coverage. How much game plan specific stuff does Green Bay have? You feel like it's going to be zero.
I feel like the Packers almost never game plan. Like they're a team. They will play Minnesota and they will play Stephon Diggs straight up.
That's terrible.
They won't shade a safety. You know, the game that they tied with the Minnesota Vikings, they were up big in the fourth quarter. They were up 8 points with like a minute left. And Diggs went one-on-one with someone. Maybe it was Thielen, actually. But then on the two-point, the Minnesota needed a two-pointer to tie it.
I remember this, yeah.
Two-pointer to tie it.
I remember this two-point conversion.
Top of the screen, Stephon Diggs, and the Packers have one-on-one. One-on-one. No, like, guys... Like, that's the best player on the field. Like, the whole thing that Belichick, you know, find what they do the best.
Yeah.
Take it away and make them beat you with their second option. Make them beat you left-handed. The Packers, I feel like, never do that. I feel, this is why I'm telling you, I wouldn't be surprised if they played Gronkowski straight up. If they look the film or they look at the stats and say, well, he's not much, and so we can cover him with some safety or linebacker, and they'll play him straight up. So, like, the thing you're talking about?
Yeah.
I don't see it. We were talking before about do the running backs catch. I don't even really notice. And Montgomery was obviously a pass-catching back. He was a receiver. But, you know, this is a game where you throw to your running backs because the Patriots have trouble. I don't feel like the Packers are a team that does that.
No, Ty Montgomery actually was their leading receiver as a running back with 15 receptions. Next is Jamal Williams with 8. So they don't. Aaron Jones only has 6. So they don't really do a ton of this. And you're saying McCarthy's not going to...
I mean, unless he surprises me. It feels to me like they never game plan. They're just not game plan specific, but... We'll see. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen.
And Jimmy Graham on top of it. He's another guy they should exploit in this game if they can. I was just looking it up, though. I didn't realize Packers are 0-3 on the road.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lost at Washington.
Detroit.
At Detroit. Ugh. Now, this is the game where the fellow missed, Crosby missed.
Oh, he was terrible in that game. I remember that. Oh, he was brutal.
It was 1-for-6 or something.
Wow, and indoors.
Did he miss like 7 kicks in that game?
Wow, that's pathetic.
And he missed 1 or 2 extra points.
Yeah, I feel like he missed like 7 kicks.
Well, that's a fireable offense.
No.
Indoors?
Not in Green Bay. Just come on back. No, it really doesn't
He has
matter.
Been a really good kicker for them, not to get into kicker type for a long time.
He's been inconsistent, though, hasn't he, over his career?
No, but this is another one. Well, Rodgers blew it. Well, the guy went 1-for-6. If he makes his kicks, you walk out of there with the win. But, oh, Rodgers can't win on the road. Well... Like, I feel like Rodgers has been a victim to this stuff a lot. And I believe in the win stat for quarterback, I do. But watching it up close, there's been a lot of tough luck losses for Rodgers. Not for McCarthy. McCarthy and the Packers deserve everything they get. But, like, I don't know. If the guy makes his kicks, they win.
Yeah, but as you always say, scoreboard, right?
Scoreboard! Brady's better. I'm not going to argue with you. Do we have a Murray and Gasper extravaganza?
Sure do. 11-2. Celtic show at noon. All that good stuff. Join us, won't you?
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray.
I love that. I do love the...
Well, it's just Master of Puppets, and, you know, that's I ripped that Jim. Off. And
I don't know what the Master
you,
of Puppets
You know who
is.
Doesn't like that, though? And I'm sure you're aware of this. Hardy, not a fan. Every time he fills in for you and we play the Open, he gets, like, visibly angry.
I remember you mentioned
that. Doesn't like it. Hardy, not a fan. He hates our Open. Doesn't like it.
He's a little bit of a production snob.
Hell if I know. I don't know.
Let's hear it.
I'm just trying to stir it up here at 95.
And I thought Murray's opened. I was listening. Was it last Saturday after the 18 inning, the 19 inning thing?
Oh, he was on fire.
Oh my God,
he was great. He was
that was
really
phenomenal.
Great. Yeah, that happens about once every 3 weeks.
Gasper and Murray. Do we have it soon in time? No, it's okay.
No, I can't find
it. Okay, don't worry about it. Gasper, thanks for coming in, kid.
Good to see you guys.
Hour to go. Just your calls on an agenda-free Friday. Right to you after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.